Welcome into the Basketball Index Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor, talking to Krishna today, and we have some fresh, hot off the presses, perimeter defensive grades. So this podcast, we're going to be talking about perimeter defense. We're going to start with perimeter players, and then we're going to move to our bigs. We're going to be looking at on-ball defense, ball screen navigation, and off-ball chasers. So on-ball defense is your defense in isolation. Your ball screen navigation is your defense in with on-ball screens, a lot of the time pick and roll actions, things of that nature. And then we're going to look at off-ball chaser, which is, again, you just chasing around guys like Steph Curry. And the way these stats work, they work a little bit different than, like, a lot of times you'll see, like, defensive field goal against. But we've done a bunch of research, and we found that that is not the best way to measure. So with all of these stats, they look at how often you suppress a player, and then we look at how much you lower a player's shot quality. So in isolation defense, again, if you can suppress a guy not taking as many shots as he normally does, and you're just making it life on him very, very difficult, that is how you do better in these stats. So again, on-ball defense, ball screen navigation, and off-ball chaser. So starting, Krishna, anything pop out to you initially when you were looking at this data early here in the 2023 season?
So I guess for the I'll start out with on-ball defense. One of the names that kind of popped out to me was Mike Conley, being 10th in the league in on-ball defense, which is not so much surprising because he has a history of being a good defender, but more surprising because he's 35 years old. So, you know, still being that good at this age is pretty impressive. And I think another name that kind of popped out to me was Darius Garland. And just because he falls into that archetype of like a smaller guard, often compared to like the Trae Youngs, to the those type of guards. And like he's so much better defensively than like, you know, the Trae types, the Jordan Poole types, the Tyrese Maxey types. And so that just kind of stuck out to me too as well, is that, and I think having somebody like Garland being this good on defense, especially on ball like this, is kind of one of the big reasons that the Cavs defense works, because they do have two guards, right? So you do have two smaller players. So you do need at least one of the players to be, you know, pretty good on defense. And Mitchell's been a lot better this year too, I think. But I guess those are the two names that kind of stuck out to me the most with on-ball defense.
Yeah, let's look at, I pulled up the top 10 guys here in on-ball defense. Number one was Aaron Holiday. Number two, Javon Carter. Number three, Austin Reeves. Number four, I don't know how you say his name, Denny Avdija. There's a V in there. There's a J. He's on Washington. He's a good defender. And then fifth, we had Davion Mitchell. So that was the top five. It was cool to see Austin Reeves on there. He's an interesting defender because this is his second year, and he was good last year. He's been very good this year, obviously third best in the league. But he's the type of guy, he stays in front really well, but some of his defensive playmaking metrics are very low, like pickpocket rating, passing lane defense is very low. But his ability to actually guard guys on ball is very, very high. So sometimes I feel like we see the inverse of that with players, where guys aren't always the greatest on ball defender in terms of like suppressing and lowering shot quality, right? Like play to play. But they are really, really loud, right? There's a lot of like stolen passes, a lot of deflections. So it's cool to see a guy get highlighted that's kind of the opposite of that in Reeves. Javon Carter is another guy. I think he was number one earlier in the season. And then after this update, Aaron Holiday was able to pass him up on the Hawks. But Javon Carter was
I just wanted to butt in and issue an apology to Aaron Holiday. When yesterday I tweeted about Kevin Huerter and the Hawks getting nothing in return for him, but they got the number one defender in on-ball defense.
I mean, that's they got a first-round pick in that. Like, I understand Huerter's playing really well, but that's nothing to scoff at.
Yeah.
But Javon Carter was a guy I saw just a tiny bit last year, and I was like, this guy's got some serious juice on ball. Talked about him, I think, in a podcast in the offseason. So cool to see him playing that well. And then, so that was the top five. And then other guys on the list, rounding out the top 10, Quentin Grimes, who has been all over my timeline on the Knicks, seems like he's just making, like, the last 2 weeks, he's been playing at a super high level. Drew Holiday, this guy's always high on the list. Mike Conley, like you mentioned. George Hill, who is older also, but still playing at a high level defensively. And then Jaden McDaniels. I think the first thing that pops out to me is the Bucks have three guys that are in the top 10 in on-ball defense in Javon Carter, Drew Holiday, and George Hill. And that is, like, that's crazy.
Yeah, if you want to know why the Bucks defense has been amazing this year, it's not just Brooke Lopez, who is probably the leader for defensive player of the year, but, like, they also have excellent perimeter defense. Like, honestly, the whole team is just stacked with good defenders. So it's really incredible.
And then, yeah, don't forget they also got Giannis. So this is this is, like, I wonder if this could go down as maybe like a all-timey type defense, where it's just like, if you have this much isolation perimeter defense and then those two rim protectors inside, the versatility of Giannis, like, that's shaping up to be. I know we talked a lot about the Celtics because they also have just so many great defenders over the last, you know, 6 months to a year. But this Bucks defense also is, like, something pretty special.
Yeah, although interestingly, I kind of assumed they were still in first in defensive rating, and they've actually slipped to third. So, a bit surprising there. But still, I mean, on the whole, they've been a really good defense.
You know, one thing that popped out to me was, so the Timberwolves made a bunch of moves in the offseason, obviously. They traded for Rudy Gobert. Actually, it might have just been one massive move where just so many players came on and off the team. But one guy they were betting on was Jaden McDaniels, and he was kind of going to be their, like, defensive stopper. They got rid of Vanderbilt. They're both kind of similar players in terms of, like, they've leaned very, very heavy defensively in terms of impact. But Jaden McDaniels was somebody they bet on to, you know, give a lot more minutes to excel. And he's been top 10 in on-ball defense, which has been really good. And then we're going to move over to our top 10 in ball screen navigation. And he's been second. So that's I know things haven't gone super great in Minnesota this year, but I feel like one of the biggest bright spots has been Jaden McDaniels excelling as a defender, both in isolation and in ball screen situations. And to have a guy that's that good in both is not only rare, but also really valuable.
Yep, definitely. And kind of just looking some more at some of the guys, the top 10 of the ball screen navigation, seeing Mikal Bridges at number three is really interesting, because the Suns have an excellent defense. And I feel like Bridges is a huge, huge part of that. And, you know, the way they play, like, Bridges, like, being able to stick him on the best defender and having him be able to navigate screens at, like, an elite level is such a big part of their defense.
Yeah, absolutely. If we're going to count down the top guys in ball screen navigation, Davion Mitchell at one. Again, he was also in isolation. So real quick off the top, three guys that were top 10 in both of these stats, which, like, so this is how I think of, like, the perimeter defense when you're on ball, right? So there's some isolation, and then there's a lot of pick and roll situations. That's going to be what you're doing a lot of the time on the perimeter when you're an on ball guy. So to be top 10 in both of those is super valuable. We talked about Jaden McDaniels. He was already on the list. Davion Mitchell, he's actually top 5 in both of those stats. And when you come out of college with the nickname Off Night, that's pretty exciting. And then you live up to it at the NBA level. He's one of my favorite guys actually to watch on the perimeter, because he's just so good. And then also Quentin Grimes, is fourth in our ball screen navigation and, sixth in on ball. So those three guys, are the only guys top 10 in both. And they're just been wrecking balls all season. So super valuable. Want to highlight them doing, really difficult work. So we have Davion Mitchell at one for this, again, ball screen navigation. Jaden McDaniels at two. Mikal Bridges at three. Quentin Grimes at four. Christian, you want to give a crack at this one at five?
I'm just going to call him Io. then Caruso, then Dort.
Oh, you're not going to give his last name a shot? Io DeSumo, he's on the Bulls. He's
DeSumo.
A rookie last year, a backup point guard, and he actually popped in some of our metrics. So I saw his name a lot on the leaderboard, and again, he's playing well this year in his sophomore season. And he needs a nickname, because I'm not very good at pronouncing names.
I think it's DeSumo, right? And yeah, so then you got Caruso, Dort, Miles McBride, Kevin Porter Jr., and Reggie Bullock.
Yep.
Just outside the top 10 is Dylan Brooks.
Yeah, Dylan Brooks, also a fantastic perimeter defender. So yeah, guys on here that we've seen, obviously Caruso, Dort has been really high in these numbers in the past. But yeah, just wanted to give a highlight to the guys that are doing perimeter defense at a really high level, because sometimes that is really hard to see. Did I say this already? This little nugget, Jalen Green has had the largest jump over in Houston, high pick, the largest jump in on-ball defense from last season to this season.
No, I don't know if you said that.
That was a little nugget I found, and I thought that was a pretty fun one to bring up, because like we've talked about this, a lot of the times rookies don't really have great defensive numbers. That's like something that there's an adjustment period, but into year two and three and even four, like you do need to see growth there. And I think Jalen Green improving that much in that area is something that you really like to see in a player that you're hoping to be a cornerstone piece if you're Houston.
Were you talking about Jalen Green or Josh Green?
Jalen Green.
Okay, because I just noticed Josh Green is 14th in ball screen navigation. And he's been playing a lot more for the Mavs, I feel like, recently, and has been pretty decent. Like, I think he could be like his, how far the Mavs go could depend a bit on how good he ends up being.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Moving on to off-ball chaser. Again, the guy's chasing guys around screens. Dylan Brooks leading the league. He actually has a little bit of a cushion. If you look at the raw value, he's quite a bit ahead of everybody else. Caruso at 2, Royce O'Neal at 3. This is very confusing. This is not Jaden McDaniels. This is Jalen McDaniels. He's on Charlotte, and I've gotten those two guys confused on this leaderboards tool a lot.
I'm going to be honest. When I saw, I thought Jalen was Jaden when I saw that initially as well.
After that, Reggie Bullock, Mikal Bridges. You're going to see some guys that pop up all over the list. Is it Ayo Dosunmu? Did we decide on that?
Dosunmu, right? Isn't it Dosunmu?
Dosunmu, possibly, yeah. Is it Nikki? this has just become me reading
lists. Nikhil Alexander Walker.
There we go. Javon Carter at 9. And then is it John Conchar at 10?
Yeah, Conchar.
All right, so we've named a ton of players on this podcast. I didn't really know how else to present the data other than, I guess, highlighting the players. But yeah, these are the if you're talking about perimeter defenders, these are the names you should be using. I think the highlight of the show is that in both on-ball defense and ball screen navigation, Davion Mitchell, Quentin Grimes, and Jaden McDaniels are top 10 in both. I think that's like the big thing to take away here, because that is really, really impressive stuff.
Yeah, and I feel like Davion Mitchell is just like vital to the Kings defense, because I think in our power ranking episode, I was kind of talking a bit about how the Kings had a pretty good shot quality profile out on defense. And I feel like Mitchell's a big part of that, because like, as you mentioned, it doesn't seem like they have a lot of great defenders on their team, but Davion Mitchell is definitely one of those great defenders.
Yeah, I think I said he was the only positive defender on the roster. I think I still stand by that. He's just so good. He's just so darn good. And to have, like, I think there's something to be said of like having guys that are solid on the perimeter, right? Like, you want that. You need a mix of those guys. But if you have somebody that is hyper elite, like, it can really do some things for your defense. But let's move on to bigs. We've talked about the perimeter players. Now we're going to talk about the bigs and how they rank in just on-ball defense. There's not a lot of bigs chasing guys around. There's not a lot of bigs in pick-and-roll ball as the defending the ball handler in pick-and-roll defense, because normally it's the opposite. They're taking them in the pick-and-roll. So we're just going to talk about isolation defense. Basically, a lot of the times, like when you get switched and you're out on an island, like, can you hold your own? And the top five this year, Nick Claxton has been far and away, like, considerably better than everybody else. He has a B relative to the entire league, which is like really, really high end stuff for bigs, because obviously, like, if you're 7 feet tall and 250 pounds, it's going to be a lot harder for you to guard an extremely shifty player out on the perimeter. So Nick Claxton has been far and away the best isolation defender for bigs. After that, Max Kleba, Drew Eubanks, Jaren Jackson Jr., and then Spicy P at five. And then I wanted to give a little shout out to Kevon Looney at six. These are the guys that have been the best in isolation on the perimeter for bigs. Any of those guys stand out to you, Krishna?
I think Triple J's, just like him coming back, has kind of really got Memphis. Well, I think Memphis defense was playing a little better. Was playing pretty decent without him. But like, you can see how much he impacts their defense. I think he's like, I saw a stat. He's like top 10 in blocks, despite playing like, I think like he's like 221st or something. So, something absurd in terms of like having an insane low amount of minutes, but being top 10 blocks. He's, but then like, and again, like part of it is like being able to guard on ball. Like, he's a guy who could theoretically switch. He can play like, I feel like he's going to be really, versatile with like, in terms of like, he's, you can play him as a helper. And then even on ball, like, I feel like that's the big difference between him and say somebody like Rob Williams, where the Celtics kind of moved Rob to more of a helper role last year. Not necessarily to hide him on defense, but just because like I think partly because like Horford was better, but like I feel like Jackson is like, that's kind of the difference between them, is like I feel like Jackson's a better on ball defender, but yeah,
I, you know, I'm gonna go out on a limb here. I think Jaren Jackson Jr. is just such a tremendous defensive player. Also, the versatility he brings. I think he has a chance to be one of the best players of the decade.
Wow. So actually, let me ask you this. Do you think he can win Defensive Player of the Year this year?
Yes, absolutely.
Even with the missed games?
Yes. He has been, you know, when you watch those movie trailers and people are like, this movie, they're calling it a tour de force. That's how I feel about Jaren Jackson Jr. every time he steps on the court.
Yeah. I think, wow, but one of the best players of the decade.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's like,
I mean, his really age timeline lines up for it pretty perfectly. But yeah, I just think, because the other thing
could,
that makes him
could
valuable,
he be a worse scoring version of Anthony Davis?
You know, I don't think he
could. He have the same impact as Anthony Davis?
That's a better question. I don't think he's anywhere near AD offensively, but the one thing he does do is he is a three-point shooter, right? He's taken them at a pretty good volume throughout his career. He is fearless on taking them, which is a big thing for bigs. Like, he has, like, sometimes too, where you're like, hey, man, like, you're rolling down the court late and you're jacking up like a three, like three steps behind the three-point line, like in semi-transition, where it's like, you're not Kevin Love yet in like that regard. I'm going to need you to rein this in a little bit. But that he has no fear there is important. He's a good free throw shooter, a very good free throw shooter for a big. That's very important. He's definitely able to just overpower guys, which is great. He doesn't have, it's hard to compare people to him. But I think defensively, I do think that he could be at that level. Yeah. Now, I don't think quite often, like, so AD's like a plus two on offense in like his better years in LeBron. I don't know if Jaren ever gets there. I think he can be a positive, maybe like a plus one, but I think he can match the defensive impact, and maybe, I don't know. He might be able to surpass it in terms of just impact. I don't know if he ever surpasses it in terms of like talent and versatility, but in just terms of impact metrics. I don't know. I think he's got a shot. I think he's a really, really good player that has a chance to just be an absolute monster for the next, you know, 7+ years.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's interesting with Jackson is he's shooting 36.9% on threes this year. Now, obviously, I don't know if that's going to hold up, but that willingness to shoot threes, and he's shown the ability before, like in his second year, he shot 39.4% on threes with a total of like 368 attempts. So his like now his 3-point percentage has kind of been all over the place. But like just that I do wonder like in terms of comparing to Anthony Davis, like having that 3-point shot. So he's not going to have the same type of role gravity that AD has. Like he's probably never going to approach that. Right. Like AD might be one of the greatest players in terms of like role gravity in NBA history. So I it's just unlikely Jackson approaches that. But like having the shooting, like being a better shooter and maybe being able to play a bit more off of Ja and Bane and provide spacing, especially when they kind of go small with Jackson at the five, could maybe get him to I don't want to say he's going to approach AD on offense because like that's such a high bar. Like he's not even close in terms of like scoring volume or, you know, even efficiency, I don't think. Actually, his true shooting percentage this year is 62.7%. So it has been really good. But that's like obviously unlikely to reach that. But like, as you said, like on defense, I think he's got that. He could reach 80th level on defense, certainly. Might already have passed him, possibly.
I'm trying to think. It's hard to evaluate AD because the last few years have just been so weird and injury plagued. But the point is, Jaren Jackson Jr.
I think he probably has. Let's put it this way. If we're ranking our best defensive players this year, you going with Jackson 1, 2, or 3?
Is this still in comparison to AD?
No, now we're just doing. I'm just spitballing like defensive player of the year here.
Well, it's hard. So like right now, it's hard because he hasn't played. So like he missed a big chunk of the beginning of the season, right? So like it's hard to.
Yeah.
Like he hasn't played very much. Like, what do you have his total minutes? Like, what has he played? Like 400 minutes yet?
He's played 352 minutes.
Okay. So I can't put him in the top three when he's played like that. So like for the everyone at home, like you need to be over like 2000 minutes, like at the end of the year to like win awards. So
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like I'm saying, let's say he plays enough by the end of the season. Like who do you expect?
I don't know. If he keeps playing at this level, he's absolutely in the top three for defensive player of the year. And it's the thing of will he win it or should he win it? I think that's the better question, right? Where it's like, if he keeps playing at this level, right, where he's blocking like 1,000 shots and he's also a top five in like perimeter isolation switchability defense, I think he probably should be the defensive player of the year. But it's hard when like the Bucks are in a place in the media and with general fan understanding that they are one of the best teams of the last, you know, 5+ years. And Brooke, you know, is a very good player. Maybe, you know, Giannis and him might steal votes from each other, which could hurt their candidacy. Who else would be up there for defensive player of the year in that conversation?
I don't think Giannis is going to to me, it would be hard to argue Giannis over Brooke or Jackson.
Oh,
right?
No, like, I understand. But like, you don't think there should be some people like casting some stray votes for him?
Oh, no, there might. I mean, like you could like I think it's he's probably more important to their defense in the playoffs, for example. But, you know, in the regular season, I don't know that. But he's certainly going to get votes because of that. What are some other like.
I mean, AD's up there. AD's so been a monster this year, too. But he's going to miss a month with a foot sprain, I think.
So I want to talk about like so I think if we're going to talk defensive player of the year, we got to look at like the top five defenses. And so I'm going to name the top five defenses to you as of right now. So do you want to guess?
I also just don't agree with that.
Oh, that a player should be on a top five defense?
For awards, I think like how good your team is has like literally nothing to do with it.
I think for defense, you have to be because here's my thing with defensive player of the year. You have to be I think you have to be a big, to be honest, if I'm being honest, because I think bigs just provide way more value than like a perimeter defender.
I think there should be two awards. I think there should be an award for bigs. Then there should be an award for perimeter players.
Oh, I actually agree with that, because I actually think if you're just looking at defensive player of the year from a value standpoint, it has to be a big. And then I think it's just like unfair to the perimeter defenders. Like, I think we should have an award to, like, you know, recognize a great perimeter defender. So I agree with you. It should be two awards. And I think we're going to do that on our site at the end of the year, right? What do you think?
Yeah, I've been kind of kicking that idea around. I think it's a good one. I think we'll do it.
Yeah. But I do think for like a defensive player of the year in terms of value and like impact for defenders, you have to probably like you would like to see that like a big on a top five defense. You don't agree with that?
I think I understand like you need to have enough of an impact that your defense is good, because like if not, how good are you? Like I sort of understand that idea. And you can be dominant enough as a big. I think like I don't know if it has to be top five. I think maybe like if you were like the seventh best defense and you're Rudy Gobert or whatever, like I still think you can win the award.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. Well, so how about somebody like Nick Claxton on the Nets, who are 12th ranked defensively? Like, I don't think he's going to probably have the rim protection value, but like being number one in on-ball defense by so much, I don't know if you'd consider somebody like him.
I mean, it's going to be one of those things like I don't do a lot of award picking before the New Year's. I guess we're getting kind of close to that, but I'd have to look at the numbers. I mean, the Nick Claxton thing helps, but I would imagine the other elements of his defense aren't as good, because I looked it up. The guy's listed at 220 pounds, and it's like, well, you better be good on the perimeter if you're only 220, and I think you might be giving some things away by being like 60 pounds lighter than other bigs in the league.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I don't think like that's why I'd be kind of surprised if I think it would be hard to consider him, because I think probably his rim protection is probably not anywhere close to somebody like a Brook or a Triple J. I'm going to mention, so the Cavs and the Sixers are ahead of the Bucks right now in defense. And the reason I was mentioning that the top five defenses mattering is because I do think both the Cavs and Sixers have guys at center.
I was going to say, could Jared Allen sneak into this conversation? Could Jared Allen sneak into this conversation?
Yeah, Jared Allen and maybe even Embiid.
Yeah, he's kind of always in the you know, it's pretty crazy when there's a player where you're like, oh, well, yeah, he just kind of has to be in the conversation like every year, no matter like kind of what's going on.
Well, I actually feel like this might be the first year in like 3 or 4 years where Embiid's like maybe realistically in the conversation.
Yeah, but he's always kind of in the because back end of the conversation no matter what.
Right. But then could he be at the front end right now? Like the Sixers are second in defensive rating. That's
really
pretty. Yes. That's why I said the top two are the Cavs number one in defensive rating and the Sixers are number two.
That's surprising. But okay, so I feel like the problem with Jared Allen is like Mobley will maybe steal a couple votes from him. So it's tough.
Yeah. That's kind of like the like similar dynamic as Giannis Brook. But yeah, I think Allen should be up there.
Yeah, I do like him a lot. Okay, so one thing I wanted to look at, getting back on track for looking at so we're looking at on-ball isolation defense, and I was looking at bigs, right? And I was looking, Nick Claxton is what made me, I looked up his weight, because he's always been a slender fellow. So he's listed at 6'11", 220, and I'm like, all right, I buy that. Pretty skinny guy. And obviously, the lighter you are, it's going to be easier for you to move with smaller guys. So I looked in the entire history of the database that goes back 9 years to 2014, and I sorted by listed weight, which I know isn't the most accurate thing in the world, but it does give us a good ballpark. So I was looking at guys at 250 pounds or over that had a C or better in league-wide on-ball defense, right? Because, again, we talked about this, perimeter players are going to be more towards the top, and big guys are going to be more like towards the bottom. So, again, I found 11 guys in 9 years that were over 250 pounds and were basically average or above average in on-ball defense. The only guys that appeared on the list multiple times were Zaza Pachulia, Paul Millsap, and AD. And AD was like barely over the weight. I think he's listed at like 253 pounds or something. But I thought that was interesting, because it's really difficult to be. And I think that's one of the reasons we're seeing the league get smaller. But it is hard to be, you know, 7 foot, 270 pounds and stick with De'Aaron Fox on the perimeter, because like at a certain point, like I don't know if it's biomechanics or gravity or whatever. It's just, it's hard to move with those guys.
Yeah. I think that's there's a reason, like you're not going to ask somebody who's like 7 feet, 265 pounds to like switch on the perimeter. Right. But like, I think these guys tend to have like you tend to see bigger players or bigger centers. They're going to be like really good drop centers. Right. So yeah, I mean, that's not that surprising to me, honestly, because like you are like to be rated higher in on ball defense. You are going to be a center who's probably going to be switching more often, like somebody like Nick Claxton, who switches a ton. I don't actually have the switch percentage numbers on me, but I would just imagine Kleba's up there. And, you know, so like, yeah. You're right.
Can you guess the big that has the best on-ball defensive season in our database?
Okay, so I'm going to guess, is it Bam? Is it like Horford from last year?
No, that's a good guess, though. You got to think a little smaller.
Okay, Horford would have been surprising, but like I just remember last year looking at his on-ball defense. Oh, was he number one or two?
I don't know,
but
last year was crazy. Last year was insane for him in D. LeBron.
Yep. Let's see.
This is a team you watch a lot.
Looney?
No, Draymond Green.
Oh, how did I not guess
It was too
easy. Draymond?
It was too obvious. That's why you didn't guess him. Do you want to guess the year that was his best year?
The thing
is,
Draymond's not always a center.
He just counts as a big.
The other thing. Okay. Yeah. You know what? So I was thinking centers. So if you had said big, I might have guessed Draymond.
I might have said big, and you might not have been listening. Can you guess the year for Draymond?
Maybe you did say big.
Can you guess the year that was his best season on ball?
2016 2017.
Close. The other ones were good. The other seasons out of him were good, but they weren't quite at that level. So I think that's gonna wrap up. We've talked to on-ball defense, ball screen navigation, off-ball chaser. Oh, one little cool thing I made was if you sorted by just the perimeter players, again not bigs, players that had an A in, again, all three of the categories, isolation, ball screen, and then off-ball chaser. It was a lot of the guys we talked about on this, but it's just kind of cool to highlight. Like Royce O'Neal was on there, Dylan Brooks, Alex Caruso, kind of the usual suspects. Quentin Grimes, this guy, you know, has been getting talked about a lot this year. But then some things I didn't really expect. Caris LeVert, I feel like, needs to be highlighted. Going to Cleveland, was on the Pacers previously. Went over in a midseason trade last year, struggled offensively, and then I think he might have got hurt or something. But he has been fantastic. This is his best defensive season of his career. It's like not even close in these numbers. I'm interested to see where his D. LeBron ends up, but that was one I wanted to shout out, kind of, you know, going to a really competitive team. LeVert's always been, you know, more of an offensive player, and then kind of fitting into that defensive role has been cool. Jalen Green, we talked about earlier in the episode. He has an A in all three of these. Again, really good for Houston, a young player that looks like a cornerstone piece. And yeah, all the guys we talked about before, you know, Jaden McDaniels, Javon Carter, Drew Holiday, just the kind of the usual suspects here for really, really strong perimeter defensive guys. And not only on ball, but then that off ball component of chasing in the off ball chaser category. So yeah, that's going to wrap it up. Krishna, you got anything you wanted to get on before we head out?
Nope.
All right. Well, my name is Taylor. For Krishna, that wraps up our kind of first look into our perimeter defensive grades here in the 2022-23 season. And we'll see you on the next episode of the Basketball Index Podcast.